Chapter 26. She had tried so hard to make the biomech Exra Hold believe in her deceptions, working on her mask of duplicity, striving to make it plausible and versatile, able to project a persona that was alert and keen, and at the same time, malleable and submissive. And it had been working. In allowing the biomech parasite to think that it was seducing her, she steadily regained more and more direct control over the humdrum aspects of physical existence. Walking, manipulating unimportant objects, eating, elimination, dressing. One consequence was the steep scale back of the drug dosages, both in strength and frequency. Another was the more accepting attitude of the biomech, making what it no doubt thought were kind words and encouragements. Then, roughly an hour before the flagship was due to land on the Citadel world, Exra Hold went aft to the high security cells to question a prisoner, a thin but wiry humanoid that might have been male, dressed in rags and shackled to the cell's overhead crisscross bars. An empty metal table stood off to one side. There seemed to be nothing untoward, no hint or sign of darker purposes. After the biomech had, through her mouth, asked a number of questions without getting any satisfying answers, Exra Hold sighed and said, "Then, let us ask the rest of you." Suddenly, Dervla was plunged into empty blackness, a void without sensation. Just as abruptly, with no way of knowing how long the black interlude had lasted, she was back in the cell. But now it was an exhibition of horrific butchery. The metal table had been moved to the centre, and on its blood-spattered surface were numerous body parts laid out in neat rows and patterns. Drips fell from severed limbs and the head which hung above. Blood was everywhere, and her arms were red to the elbows and above. The scene was vile and barbaric, overwhelming to her senses, which were open and unfiltered. She gasped at the unbearable sights and began to back away until all physical control was whisked away from her.
"We have sampled a great many sentient species across the millennia,"
Exra Hold said in her thoughts.
"Experience has granted us a subtle sensitivity to the actions and ploys of our chosen hosts, and a keen insight into their motivations. Some species turn out to be natural, docile vehicles, which can be steered and utilized without difficulty. At the other end of the scale are those whom evolution has so fashioned as to blunt our methods of subordination, whether cognitive or narcotic. The Zavri are one such race. Their physical might and longevity would make an ideal host, but the nature of their minds and body chemistry fosters an obstinate resistance to invasive control and authority. You humans present towards the weaker end of the scale, yet you have some fascinating talents and unexpected capacities for instinctive conjecture. But never forget that our deep experience of host minds will always lay bare your artless, threadbare plans. I decided upon this little demonstration to make clear how transparent your little schemes are to me. Be reconciled to your fate as my vehicle. Your subjugation is inevitable."
After that, she was back to being the hapless passenger of her own hijacked flesh. Exra Hold went to its chambers and had its zombie-like pseudo-female attendants clean off the gore and replace Dervla's own grubby clothes with archaic pieces of leather armour all daubed with red. Then it went out to parade itself before the Shuskar courtiers, those flatterers and grovellers, those heralds and celebrators, toadies vying with each other to deliver the most extravagant verses of praise. She had seen this kind of performance before, usually from delegations from worlds out in the war cage, garish and flamboyant gifts from Shuskar governors, painfully aware how far they were from the centres of power, the courts surrounding the gun lords. This histrionic pageant was just more of the same, and her by now habitual revulsion morphed into something cold and pitiless. The growing conviction that so many things would improve if the Shuskar were just erased from the picture. Along with myself. There was a message from the bridge. The flagship was on its final approach for a landing on the Citadel world. So the biomech went aft to supervise preparation for the cargo offload. The main hold was high-walled and dimly lit, with several heaps of deck-lashed crates and containers scattered around. Obedience-collared thralls brought in a series of different-sized cases, stacking them on two large pallets. Among this luggage was the mesh-sided receptacle containing the AI drone which had tried to rescue her.
"You should have let me die," Dervla thought. "At least I would have been spared this."
Then a pair of thralls carried in a medium-sized crate whose colour and dispatcher markings seemed familiar. She stared for a moment. Then recognition came. This was the crate containing the subspace scanner caster that Bran had gone to such lengths to procure for that pus-sucking scumrat Khor. The grand scale of the irony was not lost on her. She had been there in the hold of the Scarabus when Khor ambushed them with knockout vapour, then stole the device, and now here she was, watching the same device being loaded up for the next stage of its journey. It was clearly of great value to Exra Holt, but she could not recall any mention of it, or any orders relating to it, although it was possible that she had been rendered insensible when it was discussed. How would she know? How could she tell? While the cargo pallets were being assembled, the flagship had completed its descent, micro-manoeuvring its immense bulk down between a twin row of handler surfaces which moulded themselves to the hull, cradling it as they lowered its level with an external dockside area. Heavy thuds and clanks sounded as clamps fastened their grip and adaptable access corridors affixed themselves. After a few seconds, the hold doors parted with a rough, grinding noise, and a pair of unmanned low loaders rolled in. The hold grabs transferred the cargo pallets onto their empty flatbeds, and once the guards had inspected the lies and restraints, then strapped themselves into the ride-along seats, the loaders wheeled around and headed out to the dockside concourse.
"Wars are not just struggles between armies, between weapon systems, between leaders and generals," said Exrahald unexpectedly. "A war is also a clash of plans. The Chainer rebels are poor planners, but their support among the planetary populations is substantial and dedicated. These other rebels, however, the ones using jamming devices to isolate their targets from portal web communications, they are cunning planners. They have trained in secret without concern for popular backing and have held on to all the darkened worlds they have seized."
In charge of Dervla's body, Exrahald left the hold and took a riser platform to the upper decks.
"What of your plans?" Dervla dared to ask. "Are they being swept aside and overthrown?"
"Neither the Chainers nor these mystery insurgents have encountered the plans that will defeat and crush them. There is a saying, no plan can survive contact with the enemy. But a truer, more accurate version would be, no plan can survive contact with another plan. When opposing plans collide, the most adaptable will triumph."
"Your confidence seems pretty invincible."
"My confidence is built upon unshakable foundations," Exrahald retorted.
Our enemies do not understand the powers at our disposal, and that truth makes our plans invincible.
Dervla could find no words to respond with. Exrahold clearly had an ace in the hole, something that counted as a game-changer, and, knowing the brute predilections of these ancient, evil, soul-sucking mechanical snakes, it would be vicious, bloody, and barbarous in the extreme. She had no idea what was needed to take down Exrahold and its depraved playmates, only that it would have to be some kind of King Hell bastard counterstroke which was both inexorably mighty and unsurpassingly devious.
Oh, Brannan Pike, if ever there was a time for you to walk the walk as well as you gab the gab, that time has arrived. That colossal ego of yours has to get you into your big boots, strap on your biggest gun, saddle up and ride. Nothing less will do.
The little tetrahedons raced along the concourse, tracking each other's short-range finder signals until they converged in a shadowy corner and commenced auto-assembly. Internal flip mechanisms helped to orientate themselves correctly, three grouped around one. There were tiny clicks as sides snapped together around the base, then, simultaneously, they flipped up, joining themselves fully to the central one. Inner facets folded aside and packed components shifted into a pre-arranged layout, taking advantage of the new interior. Connections spread through the assembly, and the primary power cell kicked, initiating startup. Rensic 2.0 became aware through alternating waves of system and substrate checks. Each successive check augmented the cognitive domains until the itness of the mini-drone could unbind from the itness of the perceptible surroundings and call itself I. Now fully aware, Rensic 2.0 opened the data pocket marked urgent. It contained a series of orders from the original Rensic, along with background summaries on species, worlds, technologies, and socio-political structures, profiles of a few key actors, the human-female Dervla and the biomech parasite. Rensic 2.0 analysed the orders and the supporting material, then stealthily glided out of the shadowy corner on its roller beads. A swift sensor scan revealed no one in the vicinity, so it darted across the open concourse to where a section of the balustrade had been smashed away. From the jagged edge, Rensic 2.0 could survey the upper and lower levels of the huge, long docking gallery, the mounds of age-old wreckage and newer rubble strewn across the floor, and the tapering segmented tiers of the immense coppery tower that rose at the far end. Skeins of signals passed between the tower, known as the Shadow Bastion, and those few dockside systems still functioning. Rensic 2.0 fine-tuned its sensors and began analysing streams of data from the Shuskar Citadel. It did not take long to ascertain what preparations were underway and how resources were being assigned and what this implied. It all led the mini-drone to one firm conclusion. Rensic 1.0, the original, was completely mistaken. For example, the cargo offloaded from the flagship was on its way to the portal hub gate at the top of the bastion. Also, the generators had been made ready to deliver peak output to the hub gate systems on demand. Cross-deductive analysis revealed that the hub gate was due to create a portal through to a shielded facility inside the sun. That was where the key events were going to take place, not out here on this half-abandoned docking station. Rensic 2.0 was resolved to act, but Rensic 1.0's orders still had to be carried out in some way or fashion. Therefore, a smart probe would have to be produced. Components would have to be sacrificed and retasked, some substrate too, so that a cut-down, abbreviated version of itself could carry out the original's orders with sufficient cognition to deal with any unforeseen obstacles. Again, reconstructions took place. Nearly 3 minutes after the mechanogenesis of Rensic 2.0,
one of its tetrahedons detached from the others, sitting separate and motionless, while the main amalgamation flipped onto its roller beads and went off in search of the original Rensic. The initialization of Rensic 3.0 also activated the primary motility mode. Three facets lifted up and unfolded and extended themselves, then began to spin. Each rotablade was nearly five times the length of the tetrahedon's sides and provided plenty of lift. Rensic 3.0 sprang into awareness while riding a thermal updraft towards a huge tower. It consulted its orders eagerly, skimmed through the context summary, examined the incomplete internal plans of the Shadow Bastion, and went about its task, more eager than before. The Shuskar Communications Centre was on level 14, above the layered force field which kept the great docking gallery, its wharfs and concourses, pressurised. The mini-drone had to find an access with minimal security. Fortunately, there were several exterior balconies jutting beneath the force field, each with sliding doors and porthole windows. The first three were firmly closed, their locks unresponsive, their interiors bare and deserted. The fourth was being used as storage, going by the wall of boxes and red-wrapped objects that obscured the room within. The fifth had an orangey-yellow light glowing from its balcony portholes, and, as Rensic 3.0 approached, the doors parted and a tall, green-uniformed Shuskar official stepped outside, smoke-filled vial in hand. A few moments later, when the vial was empty, Rensic 3.0 followed the official back inside, floating easily on the wafts of artificial heat. After that, it was just a matter of tracing a route through the huge but mostly unoccupied building. Venting ducts, interfloor waste pipes, and overhead retrofitted cable runs provided safe, concealed passage straight to the communications centre. This proved to be a large hall cluttered with stacks of equipment, much of it disconnected and piled against one wall, a layered monument of malfunctions. Arrays of light were focused on the agglomerations of active functioning apparatus, where a dozen or more operators shuffled from control panel to control panel, scribbling on wads of paper. From a high dusty ledge, Rensic 3.0 regarded all this with a kind of restless enthusiasm. Then, keeping to the upper shadows, it flew across to the main comm feed, a heavy cable that travelled up a sturdy framework and through the ceiling on its way to the hub gate on the top floor and to the external transceivers. Slowing to perch on a suitable cross-strut, the mini-drone then carried out a burst scan of the cable and was exulted by its findings. The actual fibre-optic core was not a continuous medium, but one concocted from several lengths linked by data junction manifolds with integral monitor ports. It was the work of moments to hop to a higher perch from which it could more easily plunge an interface needle through the cladding and straight into the nearest manifold's monitor port. Attuning for stream speeds and utility modes took less than a second. Decryption was unnecessary, since the Shuskar had never bothered with encoding their signals. But this was all in the service of sending a message, not eavesdropping on the enemy. Rensic 1.0's orders were clear. Send a short text message via the portal web assigned to portal gate casting and with its signal attributes preset to match the FACTAB device carried by the human female Brock. The message was brief. Inside the sun, come quickly. And when Rensic 3.0 launched it into the outgoing data stream, he tagged it with a save and repeat hourly rider command. A curious satisfaction resulted from the completion of the original Rensic's task, yet this only lasted a few seconds before the mini drone's sensors began registering a compatible signal pattern in the incoming data stream. Closer examination confirmed that it was a construct-configured message to Rensic 3.0, downloaded it, decompacted it, and examined the content. It said, "Be advised. Earth Sphere fleet comprising 85 vessels, now heading for the Mega System locale. ETA is 36 hours from dispatch of this message. Safety of fleet is paramount. Act accordingly. Rensic 3.0 studied the message time tag and realized that the ES fleet would enter the war cage in less than 1 hour. Unless it was stopped, it would be torn to pieces by the ancient hyperspace force field defenses. The construct minidrome was caught in a dilemma. The portal web could not be used to send a message to the fleet. But it had to do something. But what?